As we began this series last week, we said that our hope is that everyone embraces this reality, that I am a missionary reality. So I'll tell you what, let's say it together. I'll say it, then you say it. I am a missionary. What we said last week is that whether you're a Christian or not, whether you're a believer or not, we're all a missionary for something. Something has captivated our hearts to the degree that we want to share it and talk about it. And if you're not a believer, one of the things that you kind of have to think through and deal with is how this this small band of Christians right around the time of Jesus, how they go from that small group of people to this worldwide gospel movement that has affected so much of our culture and context now for a couple of thousand years. And if you were trying to explain it, or I were trying to explain it, or you were designing it, I was designing it, probably we would do it a little bit differently. Probably what we would do is we would say, okay, we start with the 12 apostles here in Jerusalem, and what we're going to do is we're going to send them out. Each one of them is going to kind of take a space out in the world, a country, something like that, and they're each going to be responsible for that place. That's the way that they're going to kind of handle the spread of this message, kind of like Acts chapter 8. Something's going on up in Samaria. So two of the apostles, Peter and John, they leave Jerusalem. They go up to Samaria to check it out. When they get there, they pray for this group of people that seemingly are moved by God, and God's Spirit comes. It's kind of this powerful, miraculous kind of moment. Well, there was a guy there who was converted. He was from Samaria. His name was Simon. He was a magician. And I guess like maybe comes along with maybe that that world, that personality type, whatever it is, he was kind of tied to the wow factor of what was going on. And when all these people kind of get it and they get the news, they understand God's Spirit and they have this big moment, that kind of takes over this guy, Simon the magician. He goes to John and to Peter and he says, listen, tell me how you did this. Give me this ability. He says to them, I'll even pay you money if you'll tell me how to do this. And the apostle Peter did not take kindly to that. And so here's Simon Peter's response to him in Acts chapter 8, verses 20 and 21. Peter said, to hell with your money. That's his response. To hell with your money and you along with it. Why, that's unthinkable, trying to buy God's gift. You will never have part of what God is doing by striking bargains and offering bribes. So this is one reason, just a reminder, why we don't take our theology from the book of Acts. Acts is a history book. It's inspired history, but it's a history book. If you could just imagine me standing up here today, if we said we want to do everything like they did it in the book of Acts, I would stand up here and say, okay, we're going to start a, you know, to hell with you ministry here at our church, and we need a team leader for this ministry. So I'm looking for somebody. And you know, as I say that though, I've actually been out of, you know, seen some of you at your kids' sporting events. I think some of you would be very gifted at this ministry, actually, if we had one. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to talk to you about something that, as much as I know, I've never talked about in a message, a complete message before. We're going to talk about this whole idea of missionary community, because what happens after Acts chapter 8 is that the apostles stay in Jerusalem. They don't really travel that much to all the world spreading the message. So the question comes up, well, then how did it happen? How does the message of the gospel go from Jerusalem to all the world? And the answer is that groups of friends would leave Jerusalem and go to cities and attack that city for the sake of the gospel and plant a church and multiply themselves into other believers who would then go and do the same. You look at probably the most powerful mission-sending church in all of church history was the church at Antioch. It became the hub, really, of this global movement of churches. Who started the church at Antioch? No one knows. A group of unnamed Christians, a group of unnamed friends went to Antioch and said, we're going to take this city for the sake of the gospel. And they went there, planted their lives there, and then ultimately plant a church there. And in the context of Christianity, early Christianity in the book of Acts, I just want to say this to you. This is normal Christianity. This is how people view their lives. Normal Christianity was to be on mission. So here's how, if I could say the message to you in a sentence, here's how I'd say it to you, Dan. We're talking about missionary community, or maybe another way to say that is spiritual friendship. When we're talking about that, it is absolutely fundamental, but kind of accidental. So be intentional. That sounds very definitive, right? Doesn't it? There's three words: fundamental, accidental, and intentional. We're going to go over to Acts chapter 20, and we're going to look at Paul rounding out the third of his missionary journeys. And when Paul had said these things, he knelt down and prayed with them all, and there was much weeping on the part of all. They embraced Paul and kissed him, being sorrowful most of all because of the word he had spoken, that they would not see his face again. And they accompanied him to the ship. Now, a little context. Paul here, like I said, is rounding out the third missionary journey. He's meeting with these Ephesian elders. Now, remember, in Ephesus, he gave 3 years of his life to plant this church in Ephesus. 3 years of his energy, 3 years of his resources, 3 years of his time, 3 years of his life that he will never get back again. So he is very connected to this church at Ephesus. And when he comes back through on his third missionary journey, God's Spirit has revealed to him that he's headed back to Jerusalem. He'll be bound there. His missionary career will be over, and it's going to be very, very, very difficult. And so he tells this to these Ephesian elders, and this is the last time that he's ever going to see them. And you see the emotion. You see the emotion that's tied to these relationships. And so when we say that this whole idea of missionary community or spiritual friendship, when we say it's fundamental, what we mean when we say that it's fundamental is that Paul's, his friendship need is a sign of strength, not a sign of weakness. I'm gonna say that to you again. Paul's need for friends, your need for friends, my need for friends is a sign of strength, not of weakness. Let's go back to creation. It's always been this way. All the way back in Genesis, every day that God created, you get to the end of each day, it was evening and morning, it was the first day, and God always makes a statement. He always puts a stamp on every day, and God saw everything that he created, and God said, it was good. At the end of every day, it's good, it's good, it's good. He said, 6 days, every day, it's good. Now, by the time you get over to Genesis chapter 3, whenever Adam and Eve sin and they kind of wreck creation by introducing sin into it, after that, things are not good. But from that point backwards, everything that God has created is done. It's good. It's right. As a matter of fact, there's only one thing in creation that's not good. Pre-sin. Now, what you think about it? Perfect man, perfect Adam and Eve, perfect God, perfect place in the Garden of Eden. And there's only one thing that is not good. Genesis chapter 2. It is not good that man should be alone. So I want you to think about this for just a second. The fact that you and I need each other, the fact that you need friends and I need friends, is not a sign of our imperfection, but a sign of our perfection. I'm gonna say that to you again. The fact that you and I need each other and need friendships and need relationships is not a sign of our imperfection, it's a sign of our perfection. See, this whole Western mindset that you and I have, this kind of John Wayne mentality that you don't need anybody and you're gonna go out there and be independent and do that all, we think that's strength. It's actually just the opposite. That's weakness. Listen, you and I weren't just created for community, for each other, for relations. We weren't just created for community. We were created from community. In eternity past, God, Father, Son, and Spirit, right? The Trinity, they exist, three distinct persons in the one Godhead. This unique, if I can say it this way, this dance of Father, Son, and Spirit as they serve and exist together. For God to create us, isolated and all on our own. If God would have done that, it would have been a contradiction to God's very nature. But Genesis says that you and I are created in the very image of God. Therefore, part of the perfection of God's creation in you and me is the fact that we need each other. That's why it's so perfect that the text lands us on today as we launch a new term of life groups. Small groups of people who get together for the purpose of doing two things: helping each other take the next step on your spiritual journey and connecting relationally. And if you're not currently in a group, I cannot encourage you strongly enough to find one. Make friends. You were designed for it. You say, well, how do I do that? Well, like Buzz mentioned earlier, out in the lobbies, there's a catalog. It looks like this. This has got all of our groups listed in it, all of our leaders, what they're studying, when they're meeting, all the details. You can connect directly to a group. Or if that seems a little bit overwhelming to you, if you'll just grab a card that looks exactly the same as the book, fill it out, drop it in one of the black boxes, leave it for us at one of our info tables. We'll contact you this week, follow up with you, and help you get connected in a group, because we all need one. Now, when we think about groups in the context of a wide open world, of connecting, not just getting together to kind of turn internal, but to think outwardly, we think about that context. I want you to think about a couple of things. The way that we do local ministry here and trying to change the fabric of Columbus, we talk about reaching mid-Ohio, the Midwest, and the world. We talk about mid-Ohio. Part of what we want to do is reach mid-Ohio through the context of groups. We do almost all of our ministry here in the context of groups. And sometimes people come along and they'll say, now listen, why don't we get everybody at the church together and we all go and we all do this big mission project all at the same time? And I'm not saying that's wrong to do, but think about it from this perspective. We have about 90 or so life groups between our campus here and our campus in Mount Vernon. We have 3 terms a year. So at least 3 times a year, at least 3 times a year, each of our groups is doing some sort of local ministry project. So that's 90 groups times 3 times a year. That means 270 days out of the year, we have the calendar covered on average in terms of making a difference locally for people who are impoverished in some way, people who have some sort of dysfunction going on in their lives who could use some help, people who need help with things like education, supplies, backpacks, you name it, food, clothes, all those kinds of things locally in ways that we can help families. We've got 270 days covered. When God allows us to multiply 90 groups to about 120, 125 groups, we'll have 365 days covered on average, something going on from our church ministering here locally. There's no way that we could get everybody in our church to show up on one day. You got calendars and meetings and schedules and all those kinds of things. We can do way more mobilized in a decentralized fashion in groups than we could ever do trying to get everybody together in one place. So as we dreamed and thought about this year, one of the things we thought about is how can we do a better job of mobilizing our groups, not just locally, but globally. So every group leader this year received the Life Group on Mission Guide. And we want each of our groups to be connected to a missionary internationally, some way, somewhere. And all of your leaders have a copy of this. It's spelled out kind of what we're dreaming, what we're thinking. And then there are different opportunities for missionaries for you to connect with as a group. Now, maybe somebody in your group already has a missionary that you know that you want to connect with. That's great. What we're hoping for, praying for, is that each of our groups is connected to a missionary to the degree that they're praying for them, maybe sending them supplies, that they're communicating regularly with them, they're ready to welcome them whenever maybe a missionary or a missionary family comes home on furlough, that there's a missionary somewhere around the world who knows that there's a group of people here who are holding the rope for them as they're doing everything God has called them to do around the world. Listen, Paul, everything about Paul's life is changing right here in Acts chapter 20. Up to this point, Paul's been in control of his life. He said, I think I'm gonna go here. Okay, he listens to God. Okay, God, I'm gonna go here. Maybe he'll take somebody with him. Maybe he doesn't. I mean, but here, from here on out, everything changes. From here on out, Paul's no longer in control. He's gonna be put in prison. He's gonna be beaten. He's gonna have trumped up charges against him. He's gonna go through numerous trials. For years, he's gonna languish in prison awaiting this meeting and that meeting. He's gonna be shipwrecked. He's gonna be endure a harsh winter on a desert island. He's gonna be bitten by poisonous snakes. Really, Paul's life from this point forward in Acts chapter 20 becomes very, very difficult. But the other thing that changes from this point forward in Paul's life is that he's never alone. He's always got a group of people with him walking the journey, that he is multiplying everything that God has put into him. He is multiplying into into this other group of people. So I would just say this to us. If Paul needed friends, well, listen, there's one stronger than Paul, right? Jesus has 12 disciples, and on the last night of his life, he's facing the crucifixion, the most difficult moment of his life. What does he get? Three of his friends, and he says, I need you and you and you to pray with me. God needed somebody to pray with him. He said, I need the three of you to pray with me. So if Paul needed friends, if Jesus needed friends, if God exists in the context of community, what does that mean? That means the more I have and engage friends, the more like Paul I am, the more like Jesus I am, and the more like God I am. And the less I engage friends, the less I engage community, the less like Paul I am, the less like Jesus I am, and the less like God I am. And that applies to you as well. This friendship need that God has given us is fundamental to who we are and to the cause of being part of the global missionary movement of the gospel. Now, watch what happens next. Pick it back up. We switch from Acts chapter 20 to Acts chapter 21. And when we had parted from there and set sail, we came by a straight course to Kos, and then the next day to Rhodes, and from there to Patara. And having found a ship crossing to Phoenicia, we got aboard and we set sail. Then we had come inside of Cyprus, leaving it on the left. We sailed to Syria and landed at Tyre, for there the ship was able, or was supposed to unload its cargo. Now, when we say accidental, what we mean by accidental is that really these spiritual friendships are gathered around affinity instead of around the relationship. Now, as I read these verses, I know that some of you are thinking, man, this sounds like a travel itinerary, right? You just read me this place, in between this place and this place. Well, scholars have noted from this text, from this little travel log from Paul, that he lands at Tyre, T-Y-R-E, and begins to meet with this group of people. Now, what's interesting, what's noteworthy of that is, as much as we can see from Paul's missionary journeys, Paul never planted a church in the city of Tyre. That somehow, some way, probably from one of the churches that he helped plant in Galatia, a group of Galatian Christians, probably unnamed group that we don't know who they were, probably moved to Tyre and said, we're gonna start a spiritual community, a church here. So Paul, who kind of looked at these young believers in some ways as his children, he talked about Christianity like a family, like he said to the Galatians, to the Thessalonians, like, man, how often I would have gathered you as a hen gathers her chicks. He kind of looked at them as a spiritual father to his children. In a way, then, these folks at Tyre are kind of like Paul's spiritual grandchildren, if you think. They're two generations away. Now, what's interesting to me about that, as I studied it this week, is that, you know, now that LifePoint, now that we've been around for 11 years, we're kind of getting to experience some neat stuff like that. Like about 6 years ago, we helped plant Living Hope Church over in Marysville. And they've done an incredible job of reaching there locally, trying to reach out globally. And last year, Living Hope planted LifeSpring Church, which is down here to the south of us. And we were able to help be part of that. So LifeSpring, they're kind of like our grandkids, right? As we think about not just our generation and another generation, but now another generation moving out or coming out of there. And so what happens is churches influence churches just like people influence people. And so I'm gonna ask Christy Lowe, our missions director, and Steve Griffith to come up to the stage, and they're gonna kind of talk to us about how that happens. See, people influence people. At least we've seen it the most in our context as we've kind of taken steps on some of our short-term mission trips. And when we summarized 2015 in terms of our short-term trips, there were some great moments, and there were some difficult moments, and then there were some great difficult moments. And Christy and Steve are gonna talk about one of those.
Yeah, like Dean said, a lot of times when we take a step of obedience, especially as we take a step out on mission, it is usually filled with this strange combination of really great, amazing, God-filled moments and really difficult moments. And Steve's story, when he went to Jamaica a couple years ago, is a great example of that. So we've asked him to share a little bit of that with you this morning. So Steve, why don't you go ahead and just start off by telling us how you even got on the plane to head down there.
Okay, so I never signed up to go on the mission trip. Brian Myers was leading the trip. He's a good friend of mine, and he continued to pepper me with, you need to go to Jamaica, you need to go to Jamaica, for a good 2 or 3 months leading up to it. I had legit reasons, I felt, for not going. One, my wife had a high-risk pregnancy going on. She was about 23 weeks pregnant. And also in the summer, I teach class at Ohio State, and that would have interrupted my class. So finally, Brian conceded. He said, okay, so if you're not going to go, a week before we left on a Sunday, the plane left at 5 a.m. on a Saturday, he said, in between services, can you come and pray with the group? I said, no problem, man, I'll be there. Well, we have 2 kids under the age of 6 at this time, and we were late and missed it. So I went into the 11 o'clock service, standing right over in that part of the auditorium during the worship set, first or second song. I hear loud and clear, Steve, I want you to go on the trip to Jamaica. Somebody is going to get sick and have to drop out. And when that happens, I want you to go. So I told just my wife, because I didn't want everybody to think that I was nuts. And after the service, I saw Brian to apologize for missing the prayer meeting, but then I pulled him aside and said, this is what I heard. I just want to let you know. His immediate reaction was, do not say that. Don't say that. Don't tell anybody that. I've come to learn that that was one of the things that was really worrying him on the trip. So I didn't think much more of it. Fast forward to the following Friday, the plane's leaving at 5 a.m. on Saturday around 3 o'clock, in my house, I get a text message from Brian. And it said, got your passport ready. I immediately called him and said, what's going on? He said, we just had to rush one of our men to the emergency room. Turns out he has a blood clot, can't get on the plane, it could potentially kill him. Ball's in your court. So I went and found Angie and told her what happened. And she asked me, well, what are you gonna do? And I said, I think I should go. And she said, I agree. And it was just that step of obedience. God had to like rattle me, obviously, but it was really Angie who could have just shut it down right there. You're gonna leave me pregnant with 2 kids on my own. And her response was, I agree, you should go.
Well, one of the beautiful things about doing mission as a community with one another, the reason why we don't send people on a short-term trips by themselves is that we're there for one another during that experience to pray for one another. And a lot of times when the things get difficult, we do have to intercede on behalf of one another. And so, Steve, why don't you tell us a little bit about how this came into play once you did finally get down to Jamaica a day after you found out you were going?
Okay, so that whole week I've never seen prayer immediately answered like I saw on that trip. It was like Matthew 18:20, when two or more living in obedience, it just happened. It was miraculous. But for me personally, as soon as I stepped on the plane, I had big plans. My area of expertise is in early literacy. I can't do a lot of things well, but I can teach a kid how to read, especially if they're dyslexic or something like that. So immediately I'm like, I'm gonna go to Jamaica, I'm gonna find all the kids. They can't read, I'm gonna teach them to read, they're gonna build a school and put my name on it. That was how I was thinking. So, Jesus had another idea. So I got there and things went south fast for me for about 2.5 days. What I've come to learn, it was just kind of spiritual warfare. Guilt predominated my thoughts. I left my wife and family at home. Inadequacy, we are building houses, and the people that were on the trip with me know that I'm more of a liability with power tools than I am without. So I was like, am I here just to paint the high places in the houses? And I really checked out emotionally, spiritually, even physically. I was removing myself from the group. They were praying for me. And so on the third morning, when I just wanted to go home, I woke up about 5 a.m. and it wasn't just a wake up. It was like a startle. The best way I can describe it is when you're dreaming that you're falling out of bed and you wake up to catch yourself. I'm not a morning person, but I just got up. I just felt like it's time to get up. So it's dark, it's 5 a.m., nobody else is up. I walk out to go get coffee. That was my first thought, coffee. And I go out in the courtyard and here comes Brian Myers down the path. And he says, "You're up early." I said, "I know, I got rousted out of bed." As we were passing each other, he says, "By what?" And my response kind of flippantly was, "Jesus." And he stopped and said, "What did you just say?" And I said, "I don't know. I got rousted out of bed by the Holy Spirit. I just want to go get some coffee." And, and he said, "Dude, I was just in my villa praying, wake Steve up. I need him in the game. He's checked out. I need him in the game." That obviously hit home and changed things around so I could engage. But it was prayer. It was other people's prayer that for me that helped.
So why don't you tell us just kind of then as you moved out of those first few days and after that moment, when was it that you really realized, gosh, God does have me here for a reason? What was that moment when you realized you were supposed to be there?
About 2 hours left in the trip. We had finished building. We were building a 21-year-old man's house. His name was Mark. I had not interacted with Mark a whole lot because he was building his house. At the end, we went to the other site, and I was just sitting down on a hill. Yeah, right there it is. It was cool that this was captured. I was sitting in that exact spot, and he sat down next to me and said, "Are you all right, Mon?" He thought I was overheating. I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." And he kind of went on to say, "Thanks for helping build the house, but can I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure, man. What's up?" And he said this, like, remember it like it happened yesterday. "I've been praying to God every day that someone would teach me how to read. Can you help me?" And I was like, "What'd you just say, man?" And he says, "If I can, now that I have my house, I have hope. And now I want to learn how to read. I can make something of myself." I immediately was like, pencil, paper, let's go. I was teaching him, and when I'd ask him a question, he'd raise his hand. You can see it right there. And I said, "Nobody else in class, Mark, just me and you." So I went for about an hour with him, but I couldn't shake the emotions that I was feeling of like, why now? Are you kidding me? I can't do much in 2 hours. You give me a whole week with this guy, forget about it. And I had to get up and go down the hill. I handed him off to Mary Krell, who's a kindergarten teacher, said, "This is what we've covered, pick it up from here." And I just went and broke down and really didn't really understand. And it took months for me to understand. And what I learned was if Jesus needs Mark to read, he doesn't need Steve Griffin to do it. My agenda wasn't of importance to God. It was his agenda for me and the people. And so what I left Mark with, because of my expertise, I was able to say, "Hey man, there's nothing preventing you in your brain. Trust me, I know what I'm talking about. You can learn, you just need to keep trying and it'll happen, your brain will make it happen." So I left him, my role was only hope there. So then I come home from the trip, processing all this. 10 days later, we have a 2-pound baby arrive at 26 weeks, Roman. We're in the hospital for 3 months. My grandparents both pass away during that 3 months. And my career, I was in a public school system where there was a strike. So my career was like up in the air. And I reflect on it now. God's ability to orchestrate the details of not just the Jamaican people's life, but the people that go. He knew what I was headed into. And he said to me loud and clear, and I still draw on that week, "Steve, if you'll just allow me into your life through obedience, through prayer, through fellowship, and no matter what's going on, there is always hope because I love you, my son loves you." That was the big takeaway, and I still draw on those 7 days today with that. So
that's awesome. Well, you guys, thanks, Steve, for taking the time and sharing his story this morning.
I would just say, as maybe today God is starting to stir you and speak to you about one of our trips, if you step out into the lobbies, we just put together a next steps guide in terms of global mission, global reality. And on the back of that has all of our trips and dates, locations, the details that you need to begin praying about the possibility of you being part of one of these trips. The last word that I said was you're gonna have to be intentional. And by intentional, what I mean by that is that friendship is the point of salvation. And what I mean by that is when you read on through this passage in Acts, and these people from Tyre that don't know Paul, they begin to push back on him because they're empathetic. They don't want him to go to Jerusalem. They don't want him to suffer. They don't want him. And they say, listen, we don't think you ought to do it. And Paul says, no, God's told me I've got to do it. And there's this back and forth. And what I love about that is that Paul allows himself to share life with these people. He's obviously a lot older. He's a lot more experienced, probably more spiritually mature than they are. But he shares life with these people in the context of community for the sake of extending the kingdom of God into other places. And it's, again, we're not just created for mission. We're created from mission. Because Jesus came here to make us God's friends. If you can think about it this way, Jesus leaving heaven, coming to earth is like one big mission trip for you and me. Not so that we could just have salvation, but so that we could be people on mission that live for the sake of the kingdom being extended to all the earth, just like he was. And I love what Steve said. God doesn't need you to do it. And he doesn't need me to do it. But what other way would we want to live? He allows us to be part of it. In John 15, Jesus says, listen, he says, you have not called me, right? You have not called me. I have called you. I have chosen you. And I have made you friends. I could have made you servants. He said, but listen, servants don't know what the master is doing. No, I have called you friends. So Jesus comes, he gives his life on the cross for you. He opens heaven wide up to us so that you and I can become the friends of God personally. And when we do that, we take the step into community. And our hope and our prayer is that our groups will begin to see the world globally to the degree that our life groups will begin taking steps toward mission trips together as a group, and that our WOW offering next week can begin to support those trips and those moves. Because mission and multiplication around the idea of affinity. See, we have affinity with the Almighty. So what does that mean? That means I can kneel on a beach and pray beside anybody. The gospel, the fact that we're all flawed, that puts us all on a level playing field. So nobody's better than anybody else. So the gospel is the thing. It is the hope for the world that destroys things like racism and misogyny and prejudice. Mission and multiplication, multiplying our lives into other people. Mission and multiplication in the context of affinity. It's rooted around community. That is normal Christianity. So let's be a people who live that out. Let's pray together. And Father, thank you for the fact that you don't just send us, but that you were sent for us. The fact that, God, you're not sending us out to do something that you, your very self, didn't do. Out of your nature, you have created us to need you and to need one another. And God, I pray that we will be people who do both of those things. I pray that there'll be this expression, God, that you are the one who is filling us up, that we don't try and use other people to fill our lives, but that, God, you're filling us up, and because of that, God, out of these contexts of affinity in our lives, God, there'll be this connection around the global mission and around the global movement. I pray, God, that there'll be connection in our workplace, connection in our schools, connection on our teams, in our groups. I pray there'll be connection, God, in our neighborhoods that start here. But God, that as much as it starts here, that our lives will be extended for your honor, sake, and kingdom around the world. Thank you for how you love us. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.